no question about our bodies changing as we get older. The things we used to do, we can't do so easily anymore. But there's a difference between accepting a fact and making it happen. There's plenty of room for people to get exercise and stay fit as they get older. And our next guest probably gets a lot of exercise himself, pounding that point home. Andy Baxter is a personal trainer and an athlete himself. He owns Baxter Fitness Solutions for 50 and beyond in Ashland and Medford. He competed in rowing all the way up to the Olympic trials in 2008 and has written one other book and a slew of articles. Andy Baxter, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thanks, Jeff. Good morning.
So, I mean, how much of a groundbreaker are you in focusing on the 50-plus crowd?
You stumped me on that one.
Is this a whole broad field, or are you like one of the pioneers?
No, I guess you would consider me one of the pioneers. I started doing this about 20 years ago, and I'm amazed that it now seems like an overnight success after 20 years. But there are a few entities out there similar to my system, and it's a small field though, so we all kind of know each other.
Well, I was going to say, it doesn't seem like there is a lot of catering to an older crowd with fitness centers. Honestly, when I see the fitness centers with the big 24, I assume that means the median age and not the number of hours that are open.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of apples and oranges, certainly. The big box type gym and then the more medically oriented post-rehab type facility. It's a different animal altogether.
Well, and I noticed that you do have some initials after your name, MES for medical exercise specialist and PRCS for post-rehabilitation conditioning specialist. So you are the people that will get people doctors send to you after they've had issues in their lives?
Typically after traditional physical therapy, so we're post-rehab. But we're also what we like to call prehab in that we want injury prevention and staving off potential surgeries and joint replacements of that sort.
You have some words in this book. It's called The Exercise Prescription, The Stuff I Know About Exercise and the Aging Body That You Don't, by Andy Baxter. So you have some words for the fitness industry, and you put fitness in quotes. Why?
Well, it's an evil industry in many ways because it's pushing and preying on people's fears and ignorance. So and there's a lot of money in it. You know, it's a $24+ billion industry. And so there's a lot of misconception and untruth out there that gets perpetuated.
Well, can you give us one example?
We could spend all morning on that. But, you know, spot reduction, for instance, you know, the super twisty ab thingies that are on infomercials in the middle of the night that tell you that if you target your midsection, you'll make the fat in that area disappear. It's actually a section on that in there.
I notice you particularly on stuff like working on your abs, you take a kind of a dubious view there. Or
yeah.
at least on particular exercises like crunches and stuff.
Sure, because there are more effective ways to gain what we refer to as functional strength, not targeting specific areas, but targeting a more holistic approach, an integrated approach, where the strength that you gain, tap into, sometimes it's a latent strength that you tap into, is something that you can apply to the real world. And what we refer to as vanity movements really don't fit in that construct.
So you are not about sculpting a body that looks good for a bikini. You're about just making sure everything works and works as well as it possibly can.
Absolutely. Integrated systems and strength. And when we look at the three-legged stool of fitness in the aging population, and that being range of motion, cardiovascular endurance, and strength, strength is really the big one, and that's the one we want to focus on as we age, because function is everything, and it also parlays into quality of life.
I want to come back to range of motion a little bit. ROM, you mention it so often, it gets its own little acronym there for ROM. But
right.
You mentioned strength just now, and so let's get an idea of how much muscle mass loss there is after a certain age.
Yeah, typically the meta-analysis says that about 0.4 pounds a year after the age of 50 or so, and that adds up. There's a section on that that we can talk about a little bit, and that is scales. So I'll read from the book, The Economies of Scale is the chapter. Over dinner last night, my son informed me that one of his teachers had a condition that attacked her humane system. I told him I suffered from the same condition, and now I hate puppies and small children. Scales are evil, maybe not as evil as tyranny or prejudice or reality TV, but not far behind. I hate scales. The scale, much like other elements in the world of health and fitness, gives you one piece of information without disclosing other relevant pieces of information. The scale does not paint a complete picture, and this fact becomes ever more hazardous as we age. Muscle is metabolically active tissue. Fat is not. We are losing, on average, 0.4 pound of muscle per year after the age of 50 through the process of sarcopenia. So if a 65-year-old steps on the scale and sees that she has lost 6 pounds, she might think that that is a good thing, but it may not be a good thing. It may be that she has lost valuable muscle mass, which has lowered her metabolic rate and decreased her functional strength. Some of her weight loss will also be water weight, which will have a negative impact on brain and muscle function. A client of mine, let's call her Irene, went in for a checkup after 6 months at our facility. She had lost 4 pounds, at least that is what the scale said. But remember that the scale is giving you a skewed, one-dimensional slice of reality without the substance to give it any meaning whatsoever, like the Jersey Shore. What a body composition analysis would show was that Irene's 4-pound net weight loss was actually a 12-pound fat mass loss and an 8-pound muscle mass gain, while dropping multi-pant sizes along the way. And then the belly fat. Not only is the scale a skewed and limited assessor of health, so is the average person's understanding of fat. You ask, how do I strengthen my core? I say, you mean, how do I get rid of belly fat? Then you say, either sheepishly or just plain relieved that I called it for what it was, yes. Or you say, what types of crunches are best? And I say, you mean, how do I get rid of belly fat? And you say, precisely, because that wasn't so painful. Or you say, looks like it might rain today. And I say, you mean, how do I get rid of belly fat? And you don't say anything because you're marveling at my intuitive power to translate the subtext of what you just said. I know, it's a gift. What there is a multi-billion dollar industry feeding on insecurity and perpetuated misinformation. There is that. And I paraphrased. I jumped around a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. Andy Baxter reading from his book, The Exercise Prescription. He runs Baxter Fitness Solutions for 50 and Beyond in Ashland and Medford. And you can join the conversation on the exchange. You might have some questions about belly fat or other ways we actually talk about increasing strength later in life. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So, first of all, anybody who's going to start an exercise program after age 50 does need to see a doctor first, I would think.
Sure. Yeah, that's probably sure, why not? That's a good idea.
I mean, if they've been doing nothing, if they've been sitting on the couch for a long time, they wanted to start doing something they've never done before. Obviously, that's the kind of thing you probably need to check out with a medical professional, I would think.
I think a baseline checkup is prudent, certainly.
Okay, but if they've been doing something, I walk an hour a day, and they want to start walking an hour a day and biking an hour a day. I mean, that wouldn't necessarily need medical attention, or would it?
Well, there's always that balancing act between the volume of the work and the intensity of the work. Mm-hmm. And that actually runs counterintuitive to what our culture suggests, which is harder is better. Mm-hmm. And that's simply not true. Most of the work we do, we use what we call an RPE scale or a rate of perceived exertion. And what we know is that systems work much better in an adaptive state rather than a stressed and reactive state. So while there is a place for high intensity interval training, that's all the buzz these days. When you look at the pie, it's a very small slice of that pie. And in fact, roughly 85% of the total volume of your work should be done at a fairly low intensity. So the duration of the work, say your hour bike ride, is really more dependent on the intensity of that work. So it would mandate that the intensity is low enough that you could sustain it for an hour, not try to kill yourself for an hour.
All right, so you could ride like furious for 20 minutes or ride moderately for 60?
Yeah, after you get that checkup for sure, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be going heavily. So let's talk about increasing muscle mass. Is it possible to increase muscle mass, or is it basically just you're exercising later in life to maintain what you got?
That's a great question. So I like to say that an 80-year-old muscle responds to a stimulus just as an 18-year-old muscle does. So it's scalable, of course. It's relative. But given the quality of the stimulus, absolutely, we can not only maintain but even increase muscle mass. And that's essential. So we have to fight that atrophy. We have to fight that sarcopenia as we age.
I know you mentioned in the book you have 10 clients in their 90s. Is there any age at which we should stop exercising?
If age is the only factor, no, not that I know of.
All right, so not just looking at the calendar and the birth certificate, but the condition of the muscles and the joints and all that stuff.
Yeah, certainly. I just talked to a client this last week who informed me that he'd just come back from Davis where he'd ridden a double-double. That's a 200-mile bike ride from Davis out west and back. And he's, you know, I'm not going to say his age over the air, but he's up there, you know, mm-hmm. so...
So any aging expert we talk to reminds us about the dangers of falls late in life, and you address this as a fairly constant fear. How do you recommend approaching that fear?
Well, so what a lot of the research suggests is that falls oftentimes are a self-fulfilling prophecy. They're a byproduct or an end result of fear, and that fear comes from a loss of confidence, and that loss of confidence comes from a loss of strength. So how I like to approach that is to build strength. And when you build strength, you're also building connections. So neuromuscular adaptation, what it's referred to as proprioception or kinesthetic awareness, all of these things improve with exercise, as does that confidence that comes with strength, so that you can address and reverse that fear of falling.
You obviously work with the body, but encourage the mind. And attitude is mentioned very early on.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a psychologist, obviously, but how do you motivate people? I mean, particularly people who are potentially reluctant, if not even somewhat fearful about getting into exercise clothing and acting like they're in gym class for the first time in maybe 60 years.
Well, that's a great question. And the first thing we do is we don't do gym clothing. We don't do mirrors. We don't do gym clothing. We don't do loud music because we want that environment to be approachable, non-intimidating, palatable. And of course, at the end of the day, what really matters is that that individual finds something that they can sink their teeth into, that they enjoy and that they're going to come back to. Because otherwise, if they're not going to show up, it doesn't work.
So what are some of the common things you offer in the way of building strength and increasing range of motion?
So our system is proprietary. It's very unique. Some of the things that we offer is whenever possible, our movements are bidirectional. So whatever you do forward, you're going to do backward. And so the more non-dominant neuromuscular patterning we can throw at the individual, the more adaptation they're going to get. And it's also fun because it's new and it's different.
Well, and it's interesting how simple it is, too. When you talk about non-dominant stuff, you talk about actually doing things like starting with your left foot instead of your right.
And yes.
Whichever hand or foot you usually start with the other one. And,
yeah.
And you say there's a fair amount of important brain connection stuff to be achieved through that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a whole chapter on that. But yeah, simple things like that just gets you out of dominant patterns and then promotes adaptation.
Andy Baxter's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a fitness business owner focusing on people 50 and beyond. His latest book is called The Exercise Prescription, subtitled The Stuff I Know About Exercise and the Aging Body That You Don't. We're getting a quick lesson here. And you can join it, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. If you have a success story to share about an exercise program you took on later in life and how it makes you feel, we'd like to hear about that. Or ask some questions of Andy about some pitfalls along the way. Again, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. If people are coming to you because they have been injured, they have felt pain, they've gone to physical therapy and gotten through that part of it, now they want to do some exercise to build up the muscles that had gotten old and had lost some mass and tone. If they've been injured and in pain, there's probably a little bit of fear there. How do you get them to break that cycle and trust you enough to get into an exercise program?
Yeah, you've got great questions, Jeff. So cycle being the key, the operative word, is that there's what we refer to as the pain fear avoidance model, and that is a cycle. And what it is that typically if somebody has pain associated with an injury or a limitation or just sort of the progression of arthritis, they tend to avoid that range of motion. And so in so doing, they mediate that conversation that's going on between their brain and the muscle. And the brain will start to tell that muscle to stop working in a given range of motion because it hurts. And that makes good sense, right? We're just trying to protect ourselves. But the problem with that scenario is that through that mediation, that neural mediation, then the muscle stops working and we get atrophy and disuse. So we get weak, we get fearful, and we're into that cycle. So through education and smart exercise, the appropriate movements that are non-concussive, multi-joint movement where we're displacing load away from, say, an arthritic joint and putting it in the muscle where it belongs, then we can rebuild that strength, reconnect those patterns, sort of reinitiate that conversation between the brain and the muscle, and then get stronger. And then through getting stronger, regain function, decrease pain.
You really do look at the body as a series of levers, it sounds like. I mean, figuring out where pressure can be applied to get results. If perhaps this part of the lever isn't working as well, let's change the fulcrum, all that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah.
So one of the things that you talk about in here is the ARP. You mentioned it earlier, the mm-hmm. rate of perceived exertion. Mm-hmm. Unpack how you arrive at a number, 1 through 10 on this scale.
Can do. Can I jump in here?
Is that, yeah.
Are we have time for that?
Yeah, get a page or two would be good.
Okay, great. So the RPE scale... I'll just go with the beginning here. And this chapter is called You Are Smarter Than Your Fitbit. I am now going to add you to an exercise experiment with one caveat. For the purpose of this experiment, everyone is 50 years old. If you are younger, I'm sorry, you are now 50 years old. If you are older and far too wise to participate in such trivial nonsense, then I am sorry, you are now 50 years old. The first person in your group is 5'4" and weighs 200 pounds. She has a high fat mass, a low muscle mass, and a limited history of exercise. The second person is 5'10" and weighs 160 pounds. He has low fat mass, low muscle mass. He has asthma from smoking and has survived one heart attack. The third person is 6 feet tall and weighs 165 pounds. She has low fat mass and high muscle mass. She is a world champion master's rower. The fourth person is you. You are X tall and weigh X pounds. You have X fat mass and X muscle mass. Your exercise and dietary habits are X, and you are 50 years old. Again, sorry. So what you can see there, I'm going to go off book, but what you can see there is that all those people, even though they're all 50 years old, present very different scenarios. And so to think that there's one equation, 220 minus age times a given percentage, would give you a heart rate that's going to apply to all four of those people is simply not the case. And that's what we found out through experience and through research as well, is that hearts come in different shapes and sizes.
So there's a range of numbers in which you want to get to, but what's right for you may be very different from the person standing next to you.
Correct, exactly. And And so that's really common in the gym mentality, is you get on a machine and you start sort of leaning towards whatever's going on around you. Maybe the person next to you is just cranking on it, and you feel now that you're threatened and you need to crank on it too, or whatever the reason. And so what we use is the RPE scale, and one being sitting on the couch and 10 being running wind sprints up a hill with the couch on your back. So you want to feel like you're about a 3 to a 4 in your own perception of how hard you're working. And that's basically conversational pace.
Okay, so it is a perception-based, you know, it's like what it's like the pain scale.
I mean, yes.
Used by doctors and nurses.
I mean, yeah.
What you feel, how you describe that.
Yeah. And in fact, years ago, we did a post-cardiac program where all the patients were issued heart rate monitors. And what we found was they fit into three distinct categories. One was they couldn't match those numbers. Two was it was easy for them. And then three was if they were on beta blockers, it was simply impossible. So the heart rate monitors just were not applicable, and the RPE scale worked brilliantly.
Okay, and you want to say you generally shoot for a 3 to 4 on the RPE scale,
mm-hmm.
the perceived exertion. Pause here, if you would, and tell us when people exercising should stop. I mean, if they feel something going wrong, what would make them, for example, stop for now and maybe come back in an hour? What would make them come back in a day, or maybe say, oh, I need to go see the physical therapist again?
Well, depending on the system we're talking about, if it's a cardiopulmonary or cardiovascular issue, not being able to breathe, feeling faint or dizzy, buzzy in the head, or if it's an orthopedic issue, if they got joint pain, if they have joint pain, it kind of depends on what the issue is. And there are some pains, as mentioned, because of this pain fear avoidance model that we want to work through. And there are other pains that we definitely want to acknowledge and address. I would say in general, sharp stabbing pains, I would stop and want to assess that. And then certainly if you're feeling overwhelmed by an aerobic activity and you're well beyond that 3 to 4 out of 10, we need to back off and or stop and reassess.
There's a whole chapter here on your brain on exercise, and it's interesting to see that it looks like the whole medical establishment has even changed in this, the idea that, hey, when you got cancer or some other serious condition, you don't exercise. And mm-hmm. it sounds like the tide is really turning on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Over the last 20 years, in my experience, it's been amazing. Frustrating, but in the end, it's a good thing that things are coming around. Certainly when, you know, the brain especially. I mean, what we thought 20 years ago was that you were born with a certain number of brain cells, and that was all you got. And then once they started dying off, you got to a point where it's game over, and that's it. And what we now know is that, in fact, you can regenerate brain cells, the neurogenesis, and then we know that that comes from exercise.
Plus, you can retrain the brain cells you've got, right, which is part of the reason you talk about things. Like we talk about the offhand and the off foot, but you even talk about something as simple as brushing your teeth with your left hand?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, neurogenesis, neuroplasticity, the brain is plastic. It actually changes shape when it's given new stimulus. So something as simple as brushing your teeth with the opposite hand, all of a sudden you've got to have a new conversation between those muscles and the brain to make that work.
We have time to bust a myth here, which is the old fear of my muscle will turn to fat.
Yes, yes, fat and muscle. Back to the super twisty ab thingy for $39.95 on pay-per-view at 3 a.m. Yeah, so they're just simply different systems, I mean, or different entities altogether. And so, granted, the more muscle mass you have, the more thermogenically active tissue you have. So you're going to burn more calories even while you sleep. But one entity does not become the other.
That is good to know. And then finally, I want to ask you about pattern before strength and strength before power.
Yes. So I like to treat all my clients as high-level athletes. And the way I train high-level athletes, just as I train seniors, is that we have to establish the pattern first. And then once the pattern is established, then we can focus on getting stronger. And then when we want to become even more dynamic with that strength, we can add an acceleration component, and that gives us power.
So go faster or put more weight on, but know what the repetitions are completely first?
Know what the range of motion is completely. So I train the brain first and then the muscles.
Okay, brains and muscles and much more in the book, The Exercise Prescription, the stuff that I know about exercise and the aging body that you don't, written by Andy Baxter from Baxter Fitness Solutions for 50 and Beyond. We've learned a lot. Thanks so much for joining us today in The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.